the White House and the Joe Biden campaign and then the Trump re-election campaign have all been firing out messages today.
It's all about further presidential debates. It's Friday, October 9th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the vice presidential debate focused on the coronavirus pandemic. We explore a presidential message of U.S. troops out of Afghanistan by Christmas. More bad news for international tourism to Australia. And an American wins the Nobel Prize for Literature. It is all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump says he will not participate in the next presidential debate after the U.S. Commission on Presidential Debates announced Thursday that the debate will be virtual in order to protect the health and safety of all involved. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman has the latest.
Well, it's very much up in the air right now. The White House and the Joe Biden campaign and then the Trump re-election campaign have all been firing out messages today about this. And the latest from the Biden campaign is they would like to stick to the original schedule. There had been a proposal from the Trump team to delay the second debate scheduled for October 15th by a week because the Commission for Presidential Debates, which is nonpartisan, had suggested that they switch to a virtual mode for that scheduled town hall debate because the president is a coronavirus patient, and out of an abundance of caution, they thought that would be the best thing to do. Well, the president did not like that. His campaign did not like that. And so we're now waiting to find out, as the Biden campaign says, it's the commission that sets the schedule for debates, not President Trump. So a lot of back and forth and politicking and posturing on this throughout Thursday.
VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence and California Senator Kamala Harris, the Democratic Party's vice presidential nominee, faced off Wednesday night in a debate in Salt Lake City, Utah. Michael Sullivan reports the administration's handling of COVID-19 loomed large as President Donald Trump and others in the White House remained in quarantine after contracting the virus.
A wide-ranging debate, overshadowed by news the President and First Lady and others in the White House have tested positive for COVID-19. Trump's response to the virus has been disastrous, said Harris.
The American people have witnessed what is the greatest failure of any presidential administration in the history of our country.
Not so, said Pence, who noted Trump limited travel from China, epicenter of the virus, slowing its spread in late January.
And again, the American people deserve to know Joe Biden opposed President Trump's decision to suspend all travel from China.
Pence said Trump ramped up testing and pushed for a vaccine. Harris questioned Trump's aggressive timetable to develop a vaccine.
If the doctors tell us that we should take it, I'll be the first in line to take it. Absolutely. But if Donald Trump tells us that we should take it, I'm not taking it.
Pence responded,
stop playing politics with people's lives. The reality is that we will have a vaccine, we believe, before the end of this year.
The pandemic has left the economy struggling, but Harris said the problem started before the virus struck.
Because of a so-called trade war with China, America lost 300,000 manufacturing jobs.
Again, not so, said Pence.
Lost the trade war with China. Joe Biden never fought it. Joe Biden has been a cheerleader for communist China through over the last several decades.
An issue for both sides is Trump's nomination of conservative Judge Amy Coney Barrett to fill the Supreme Court seat left vacant by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The job of vice presidential candidates is to avoid mistakes that will harm their running mates, says political scientist Andra Gillespie of Emory University.
And I think that they largely succeeded in doing no harm. Now, Vice President Pence is in a different position because he's part of the incumbent administration. And so he has to answer for the failures and the successes of the Trump administration.
Analyst Rich Marr of Randolph-Macon College says this debate was especially important in this election.
People don't vote for vice presidents, they vote for presidents. But this year it's different. You have the oldest candidates ever. You've got one candidate who is the incumbent, the president, who's been diagnosed with a really serious disease.
And either vice presidential candidate must be ready to assume the role of president if the president dies in office or is unable to fill his duties. It's a somber responsibility on the minds of many voters who are already casting ballots and early voting in some states. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Vietnamese democracy activist and author Pham Dinh Trung has been arrested on anti-state propaganda charges as rights groups warn that the blogger faces the risk of torture in custody. A Taiwan opposition party effort to reestablish diplomatic ties with the U.S. angers China. Protesters clashed with police in Jakarta as thousands of enraged students and workers staged rallies in opposition to a new law they say will cripple labor rights. And China tells Indian media not to call Taiwan a country. In a tweet, Taiwan says, get lost. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. President Donald Trump said Wednesday that all U.S. troops in Afghanistan should be home by Christmas, just hours after his national security advisor said Washington would reduce its forces in Afghanistan to 2,500 by early next year. VOA's Steve Miller spoke with our Pentagon correspondent, Carla Babb. He asked her if this was an order or an aspiration.
Well, we are still trying to figure that out today because every Pentagon or military official that I've tried to speak to has been referring me to the White House for this, which of course raises the question, was the Pentagon prepared for this announcement at all? And also the fact, like you said, that the National Security Advisor, Robert O'Brien, saying that we were going to be down to 2,500 troops in Afghanistan by early 2021, this is clearly very different from that. And will require a much shortened timeline. In fact, you know, I'd love to ask Pentagon officials if it's even possible because there's so much, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of equipment alone in there. Is it possible to safely and securely withdraw? Because as experts and officials will tell you, the very last thing that you want to do is to leave U.S. military equipment around for enemies to pick up and to be able to use and to be able to study and analyze. So a lot of big questions remain from this, and we're just going to have to find out over the coming hours and days what this exactly means, or is it an aspiration that he is tweeting?
Speaking of the logistics involved, you also mentioned about the desire not to leave U.S. equipment behind. Officials have consistently said that the withdrawal of American troops from Afghanistan will always be based on the situation on the ground. What's the latest assessment by the Pentagon on the situation in Afghanistan since there is still fighting taking place?
Well, I just spoke with the head of U.S. Central Command a few weeks ago, and he told myself and two other reporters that the U.S. was very comfortable going down to 4,500 by the late October-November timeframe, which we're approaching now, because he said that the U.S. would still be able to accomplish the core task that the U.S. came to Afghanistan to do, and that is to prevent another major terrorist attack from happening on U.S. soil or against our allies. And he said, he explained that the U.S. has shown more than ample goodwill, that was his words, to demonstrate that the U.S. does not want to be an occupying force in this country, but it does have a strategic interest, a vital interest, to prevent another attack and to be certain that these entities such as Al-Qaeda, which has been partnered with the Taliban, and ISIS can't be guessed there to come and attack the United States.
One last question. We've been speaking about the U.S. on this side of the equation, but the troops are in Afghanistan. Has there been any reaction either from Afghan officials or the Taliban regarding the tweet?
So the Taliban came out and they were very pleased. They said that they welcomed the remarks. They considered it a positive step for the implementation of the agreement between the Taliban and the U.S. And they found it positive and good. And, you know, if you really sincerely trust the Taliban, then that's a positive step. The problem is a lot of people at in the United States, in the Afghan government, in the U.S. military, are kind of trusting but verifying. And that was why it was so important that the U.S. go down to 4,500 and then stay there and stick to conditions-based. So this won't come back to haunt them potentially in the future.
Steve Miller speaking with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Happening now in Asia, China's Shanghai Fosun Pharmaceutical Group said on Thursday an experimental antibody treatment for COVID-19 being developed by its unit had been approved for human testing in the United States, and the trial was expected to start soon. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. An international human rights advocacy group charged Thursday that the de facto detention of 130,000 members of the Rohingya ethnic minority in squalid displacement camps in Myanmar amounts to a form of apartheid, and the international community should pressure Aung San Suu Kyi's government to restore the freedom and dignity of the Muslim minority. Human Rights Watch, in a 169-page report, said inhumane conditions in 24 tightly restricted camps and closed-off communities in the western state of Rakhine threaten the right to life and other basic rights of the Rohingya, who have long faced both official and social discrimination. The report, called an open prison without end, pointed to severe limitations on livelihoods, movement, education, health care, and adequate food and shelter, and said these have been compounded by widening constraints on humanitarian aid. As a result, it says, camp detainees face higher rates of malnutrition, waterborne illnesses, and child and maternal mortality than their ethnic Rakhine neighbors. The camps were built to house those who fled after intercommunal violence in 2012 between Muslims and Rakhine Buddhists. Since then, almost all of the Rakhine have returned to their homes or have been resettled, while the Rohingya have not. Phil Robertson is deputy director of Human Rights Watch's Asia division.
These camps and the situation that we've documented in this report indicates that the Myanmar government is prepared to allow the Rohingya to sit in those camps and rot. The reality is that there is no significant political commitment either by the Myanmar government at the national level, at the state level, or amongst the security forces to change a status quo that has been documented by us as constituting international crimes of apartheid and persecution.
Human Rights Watch said that the Myanmar government's plans announced in April 2017 to begin closing the camps has entailed constructing permanent structures near the current camp locations, further entrenching segregation and denying the Rohingya the right to return to their land, reconstruct their homes, regain work, and reintegrate into Myanmar society in violation of their fundamental rights. There was no immediate response to the report available from Myanmar's government.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Japanese fish industry representatives Thursday urged the government not to allow the release at sea of tons of contaminated water from the Fukushima nuclear plant, saying it would undo years of work to restore their reputation. All the big stories come your way through the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. A North Korean man accused of laundering money lost a legal bid to halt his extradition from Malaysia to the U.S. to face charges Thursday, but will lodge a final appeal. Moon Cheol-myung, who has lived in the Southeast Asian country for a decade with his family, was arrested last year following the extradition request from Washington. He denies FBI claims that he led a criminal group that violated sanctions by supplying prohibited items to North Korea and laundered funds through front companies, according to his lawyers. A Malaysian court in December approved his extradition, but Moon challenged the move at the Kuala Lumpur High Court. But his lawyers argued his detention was unlawful, as the allegations against him were of a political nature. But a judge rejected the argument, saying procedures were correctly followed and Moon failed to prove the extradition bid was politically charged. Gui Sun Seng is Moon's attorney.
We should say that the judge has made a ruling, and we have to accept the ruling. And however, we have instruction to appeal this case to the federal court. And we still believe that the offense alleged was more of a political offense. So he will remain in the prison, so pending the appeal to the federal court.
It is not clear what Moon is accused of supplying, but there have been cases of businesses in the city-state sending luxury items such as liquor and watches to the north. The export to North Korea of some luxury goods has been banned as part of sweeping sanctions imposed by Pyongyang by the United Nations and countries including the United States over its weapons program.
How dangerous is COVID-19? 80% of the cases are said to be mild. Young and healthy people are at a relatively low risk. Elderly and people with serious health conditions are at risk of fatality. If you have a cough, fever, and shortness of breath, contact a doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
In a further blow to the travel industry, Australia is warning its international borders are likely to stay closed because of COVID-19 restrictions until late next year. Foreign nationals were banned in March to help curb the spread of the coronavirus, and Australian citizens must get official permission to leave the country. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
COVID-19 has turned Australia into a fortress. Its borders were closed to foreign nationals in March, helping to contain the disease but inflicting enormous economic harm. Australia is in a recession for the first time in three decades. The exclusion of overseas tourists and students intending to study in Australia has cost Australia billions of dollars in lost revenue. Australian citizens and permanent residents are allowed to fly home, but they must pay for mandatory hotel quarantine on their return. Tens of thousands of people are stranded in other countries because of strict quotas on those allowed into the quarantine system. Australians need official permission from the government to leave the country. Many of Australia's internal borders also have been closed to curb the spread of the virus. Most states and territories have managed to contain the virus, but reopening the country will take time, according to the Australian Treasurer Josh Frydenberg.
Domestic borders are assumed to reopen around the end of this year. International travel, including by tourists and international students, is assumed to remain largely closed off until late next year and then gradually return over time. And a vaccine to be available around the end of 2021 is one of the assumptions in the budget.
Large-scale immigration, which has fueled prosperity in Australia, will only resume when international borders are reopened. Safely reconnecting with the rest of the world promises to be a monumental challenge for the authorities here, though. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
We continue on VOA Asia. Facebook this week banned calls for poll watching that use militarized language as it tightened a slew of restrictions ahead of U.S. elections next month amid mounting alarm that unfounded claims online could result in violence. Libby Hogan reports.
Facebook took new steps on Wednesday to bat down worries around its platform and the U.S. election. The company says it's banned any calls for people to watch polling sites that use militarized language or that, quote, suggests that the goal is to intimidate, exert control, or display power over election officials or voters. Republicans have mobilized thousands of volunteers to watch polls for evidence backing up President Donald Trump's unproven complaints about voter fraud. Voting rights activists are concerned encounters at polling stations could escalate in a tense year that has already seen armed militias face off against protesters in some cities, much of which has been organized on social networks. Despite Facebook announcing the ban, they also said they would allow a video to stay up of the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., calling for volunteers for an army for Trump. The video was initially published in September. A Facebook representative, Monica Bickett, told reporters that Facebook's policies do not generally apply retroactively and that, quote, under the new policy, if that video were to be posted again, we would indeed be removing it. Democrats have responded to all of this by hiring voter protection directors in more than a dozen states. Facebook has also said it would reject ads that prematurely claim victory or suggest that official results are invalid.
Reporter Libby Hogan. The parent company of the second largest movie theater chain in America is indefinitely closing all 536 U.S. locations as new movie releases are being postponed and people remain reluctant to go to theaters because of the coronavirus pandemic. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo has more.
The Cineworld Group is indefinitely closing more than over 530 Regal movie theaters in the United States and about 125 venues in Britain. The move will affect 45,000 employees, says chief executive Mookie Gredinger.
I think that we reached a stage that we had no alternative. It's a very, very difficult decision for us, mainly in view of the move that we need to take towards the employees. It's not simple.
The group had shuttered its movie theaters after the coronavirus outbreak, but reopened back in July.
And really at the beginning, we got a very warm welcome from our customers, and we saw the people were missing the cinema. People want to go back to the cinema, but in a certain stage, we didn't have the goods.
That's because movie studios were postponing new releases like the latest James Bond movie.
James Bond.
So for now, it doesn't make sense to stay open, says the Cineworld chief.
We were in a kind of a situation that from liquidity point of view, we were bleeding much bigger amounts when we are open than when we are closed, because we'll be like a grocery shop with no food, and we had to take this decision.
Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
American poet Louise Gluck won the 2020 Nobel Prize in Literature for her unmistakable poetic voice that with austere beauty makes individual existence universal. The Swedish Academy said that on Thursday. Olivia Chan reports.
American poet Louise Gluck has won the 2020 Nobel Prize in Literature. The 77-year-old Yale professor is one of the most prominent poets in American contemporary literature. Her poetry is characterized by what the Academy called a striving for clarity, with a focus on childhood, family life, and close relationships between parents and siblings. The Literature Prize has been dogged by controversy over the past several years. In 2019, the Academy exceptionally named two winners after postponing the 2018 prize in the wake of a sexual assault scandal involving the husband of one of its members. One of the literature laureates announced last year that Austrian novelist and playwright Peter Henke had drawn wild international criticism over his portrayal of Serbia as a victim during the 1990s Balkan Wars and attending the funeral of its nationalist strongman leader, Slobodan Milosevic. Milosevic died in detention in 2016 while awaiting trial on genocide charges at the UN War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague.
That was Reuters correspondent Olivia Chan. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. Find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for being with us. Our thanks to managing editor Diane Gao and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Keith Lame, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day and stay safe.